Ya lo hace. Pierna derecha, directo al arco. ¡Golazo! ¡Golazo!
The world of football with a soccer perspective. This is Soccer Today with Dwayne Mullins and Kevin Larame, live on the Sports Podcasting Network.
Good day, good night, and welcome to Soccer Today for Monday, August 5th, 2019. I'm Kevin Larame, joined by Dwayne Mullins. As always, very fun show for you today. We'll talk later on about Alejandro Bedoya's comments. We'll do the weekend review. But to start the show today, a new manager was announced or presented this morning in Cincinnati. Ron Yance, and to talk about the new manager, our favorite correspondent from Cincinnati, DJ Switzer, at Wrong Side of Pond. How you doing today, DJ?
Very good, guys. Thanks for having me back on.
We got to stop meeting this way, DJ, when new managers are being named. Third manager to lead FC Cincinnati this year, of course, one on the interim basis. Why is this one going to be different than the others?
Oh, man. Here's hoping he's different than the others. Although, to be honest, it does seem a much different setup than we've had with the last two coaches here in Cincinnati. And those being Johan de May, who is staying on as after his interim role as head coach over the last 90 days. He'll be returning to his head assistant position. And of course, those of you up in Canada may be familiar a little bit with de May. He worked in the Montreal Impact Youth Academy prior to moving down to Cincinnati to take an assistant under prior head coach Alan Cutch, who spent some time with Vancouver Whitecaps and their two team as well. So definitely some Canadian connections still within the FC Cincinnati team. But it is Ron Jans who's taking over. Jans coming in from Holland. Most recently with Pek Zwolle as his last club that he managed full time, and he did seem to have a little bit different air to him than what we've seen out of the last couple coaches here in Cincinnati.
Fair enough. Now, we have had seen Dutch coaches in Major League Soccer before with a mixed result. I think it's fair to say, maybe even a little edging towards the poor results. So I'm wondering in these early moments following the hire, whether we've had a chance to sort of ascertain how much Sean knows about Major League Soccer and how much we can assume that he will be able to not only adjust to the league and adjust to the realities of the league, but handle a roster that clearly has flaws in it, as we're seeing with FC Cincinnati this year for the rest of the season.
Yeah, so that was something that when Jens was introduced this morning was brought up during the press conference. And he specifically addressed the fact that he's worked with clubs who have kind of been on the down and outs before. Pek Zwolle is a pretty small club in terms of the Holland Eredivisie, and they're not necessarily, you know, one of the giants. And he had relative success with them, getting them to punch above their weight, and also won the Dutch Cup, beating Ajax handily in the final in his first year in charge with them. And then as well, he moved on to Groningen from Pek Zwolle before returning there. And they were on the verge of relegation after eight matches, only having a single point. And he was able to resurrect that side, keep them up, and keep them competitive. So he was able to draw comparisons to that experience, saying, hey, I've worked with teams that weren't performing to the level of expectations before, and I feel like I'm capable of taking on that type of challenge again. So there's a hope that he'll have that type of touch to be able to get a team that certainly is not necessarily the best in Major League Soccer currently, with the worst record in the league, and maybe be able to do something a little bit special with them. But he did stress, too, don't judge him on the next 10 games necessarily. There's a lot to accomplish during the next season as well.
Being named late in the transfer season in the summer as well, it demands more time for him to judge his work because of the players that maybe the next window will join. And that's where the direction of going with a Dutch manager is interesting to me, intriguing even, and maybe bodes well for the future. Do you think this move of going with a Dutch coach, trying to maybe get the attention of the Dutch, I would say the Dutch population around Cincinnati and this area in Ohio, maybe get some players to come in and use the infrastructures or the environment already there to maybe have some good Dutch players come in and find Cincinnati as a very worthy home to play in Major League Soccer. Do you think there's the mindset, too, of the future of this team with regarding players for the next couple of windows to go in a Dutch direction as well?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's even more understated or understood when you consider that the new general manager at FC Cincinnati, Gerard Niekamp, is also Dutch. In fact, he and Jans worked together at Pek Zwolle when Niekamp was the technical director there. So the two have experience working with one another. And Niekamp was very clear when he came in that he was going to be establishing a very Dutch fundamentalist kind of way of approaching soccer. And it speaks a little bit to a couple minutes ago when I said that Jans was getting clubs to punch above their weight. That's kind of the Dutch mentality in general, a low population country that routinely performs and puts out some of the best, not only club sides in the world, but also a national side. And obviously they've been on the down and outs a little bit, but they're also kind of coming back into the fore. And that mentality is definitely something they're trying to tap into here in Cincinnati. The club do have some Dutch roots, although I wouldn't necessarily say that Cincinnati or the surrounding Ohio area it has a large Dutch population. We're much more known for our German roots, but there are the Dayton Dutch Lions and the Cincinnati Dutch Lions. The Dutch Lions and Dayton used to previously be in USL, and they've been in PDL / USL League 2 since then. The Dutch Lions and Cincinnati played the same in the same level. And then there's also that ownership group has a small stake in the MLS club as well. And so there are definitely Dutch connections that exist within that framework. And this is the first time we've really seen the MLS or USL level FC Cincinnati really lean into those Dutch players, that Dutch system. And you can see that already, not only in the GM and the head coach hire, but also in one of the two players they brought in during the secondary transfer window, and Michael Vanderwerf, who's come in as a new center back and has already looked a very solid improvement over the existing group that they had out there. So I would continue to expect to see that Dutch pipeline tapped. And I don't know that we're going to see any more of it this window, but definitely as we get into the offseason.
I'm also wondering, DJ, it's been a difficult season, and stability has been an unknown in the Cincinnati and MLS. So now that you have an established manager with a track record, proven track record in Europe, it wasn't always easy. I just go back to this 2012 season with Sound of the Edge. Sometimes it's not easy, but you can say the same for Rémi Garde, example, in Montreal and his time with Aston Villa. So we're open to his work, but stability is important. So going forward, hopefully stability comes. But the players and the fans went through a lot this season. How do you go from now? You're last in the Eastern Conference, having a difficult time just even trying to see what to play for. So is it time already to look towards next year and play the players that you believe can be the core of your team in the future, or test players out? Literally, okay, show me what you can do. If you are Ron Jans, how do you treat the remaining 10 games?
Yeah, it's very interesting. Going into this season, Cincinnati spoke very aggressively about how they would perform this year. We'd seen expansion clubs like Atlanta and LA come in the previous seasons and really make a splash. And they wanted to be that type of club. Now, those of us who kind of watched the construction of it really questioned whether that was a possibility. And those who questioned it were right in doing so, given how the season's gone. So the club's definitely taken a new approach in how their outlook is for the rest of the season. Jeff Birding has kind of stepped into the background out of soccer operations. And I think that's been good. And we've seen Gerard Niekamp come in and speak very honestly about the state of the team and what it is. And he plainly said in one of his first press conferences, this is a side that is average and has a bunch of average players in it. So I think we will clearly see the rest of the 10 games. The club will obviously aim to get wins and keep the fan base engaged, which surprisingly has gone very well. They're still getting in crowds just the other night against Vancouver, despite the status of the team in the table, over 27,000 people in attendance. So that isn't going away, and they're going to want to have wins to motivate people. but they've got some latitude to experiment this season. And I think we're really going to see the focus shift to which of these players do we have in the squad now have a future with this club, and which ones do we need to find a new home for? They're not going to have a lot of maneuverability due to the way the team was constructed, gobbling up so much of the TAM and GAM allocation money that they had available to them in the construction of this team. But they're going to have to do some movements and get rid of some players and bring some new faces in. And they'll have room to do more of that in the offseason. And I would expect that the next 10 weeks are going to be, which of these guys are we going to take with us into 2020?
DJ, there's a lot of parallels listening to you talk about Cincinnati season. I see a lot of parallels to what I experienced 12 years ago when TFC launched. And you know, you saw an engaged fan base that was loud and crazy, and everyone was talking about them, and it was exciting. And people were still going out even though the wins weren't coming there. But the stability and the decisions and the player personnel choices just were terrible in many cases. And it took PSC, as you well know, nearly a decade to recover from that. I guess my question to that then is, do we have any sort of belief that they understand the mistakes that they made in terms of a player identification and will have the type of stability moving forward needed to be successful in Major League Soccer? Are you confident that that will happen?
I wish I'd say I'm 100% confident. The moves that they're making now appear to be ones that look like they're learning some lessons from their earlier and prior transgressions. It's hard to judge so early in the process and say, look, they've finally got their head screwed on straight. There's still ample room for meddling from people in the organization who don't necessarily have the background that some of the people they brought in have. And if they can keep themselves in check, and let the soccer people do the thinking, I think they will have a higher success rate than if they hadn't. That said, I do have some reservations about bringing in an entire Dutch staff, head coach and GM, who have no experience at all in Major League Soccer. And the game is mostly the same on both sides of the pond now, but the transfer mechanisms and the type of players that are successful in Major League Soccer aren't always the same types of players that are successful in the Eredivisie. And being able to shift the talent identification to models that more closely what MLS play is like will be a necessity. It's not to say there aren't lessons to be brought from Holland to implement here in Cincinnati. There certainly are. But there's a lot of ifs that need to go right in order for it to be successful. And as you guys noted in the past, the results from European coaches and GMs that come over here are mixed. And it is a tough environment to try to learn quickly. Now they do have some experience in Deme, who has led the team for the last couple of weeks. And they're starting to bring in some people who have had involvement in Major League Soccer, but they aren't really at the high decision-making levels of that first team. So there's going to have to be a rapid learning curve that they're going to follow if they're going to have to be successful. And I'm not saying that it's going to be a Toronto situation where it's going to take a decade, but it may take a few years for them to shift through all of this. And whether the GM and the head coach are still here afterward, we'll have to see how that goes.
Of course, Toronto also had the Dutch experiment in the middle there. I encourage your Cincinnati listeners to Google the name Nick Soelsma and learn from it. But nonetheless, moving past that, let's be somewhat positive, somewhat negative with my question to you here in terms of the roster build. Now that we've had nearly, I guess, two-thirds of or three-quarters of a season to look at this roster and know the flaws of it, well, what do you think the biggest error they made in building this thing was? And maybe to make it positive, add what you think the biggest positive that they did in the roster build, something that they really can build around moving forward.
Yeah, so I think the biggest error wasn't necessarily a singular player or a singular set of moves, but it's more the method of construction. When MLS teams come in as expansion clubs, they are given a mountain of TAM and GAM to operate with. And that is very useful for teams coming in to construct their new squads. But they're also at a little bit of a disadvantage given that teams know that they have that mountain of cash and things become a little bit more expensive as a result. And what Cincinnati used a lot of their TAM and GAM for were acquisition mechanisms, paying other teams for their players. So we saw a lot of money leave and go to Portland during their USL days to get Fernando Adi. They paid a lot of TAM and GAM to get Greg Garza, who has unfortunately not really been fit enough to be very successful for the team, despite his obvious talents. And there are a couple other scenarios, most notably being Nick Haglund, who they played way over market value for to Toronto to acquire when he's got a pretty low base salary and honestly is probably about a third string center back for most teams, especially successful ones in this league. So they burn up a lot of their TAM and GAM. Oh, geez, I almost left off one of the biggest ones, paying almost $600,000 in TAM and GAM for all of Philadelphia's draft picks when the trend is to not even use all of your draft picks. So they burnt through all this money and left themselves in a position where they weren't able to use TAM and GAM for what most teams do, which is cap control, to be able to buy down players' contracts and get them in so that they aren't necessarily spending it on acquisition, but more on bringing in better players to supplement their cap. And because of that, they've been left in a position where they don't really get a lot more TAM and GAM on their hands until about a year and a half from now. So that was their biggest overall mistake. I'd say one of the big good things that they did was actually the guys that they brought in, for the most part, are really good guys. And if you're going to have a team that's going to not be very good, you need a group of guys who have good heads on their shoulders and good mentalities to be able to struggle through that. And some players have expressed on a few occasions that it is difficult to play for this team, given how unsuccessful they've been. But they have kept their heads up. And for a fan base that's used to underperforming professional sports teams in the Cincinnati Reds and Cincinnati Bengals, we want to see effort. And I think what they've gotten themselves for the most part is a group of people who are willing to put the effort in to at least try to look like they're striving towards wins. And they may not always get them, but over the last few matches, we have at least seen effort out of this group. And I think that it is a good sign of the mentality of the players that were selected.
It's funny, DJ, you were talking about how Cincinnati spent their money in their first off season, and all I can think about is maybe myself or other young 18, 19-year-olds, when you get your first high credit card, and you're just like, oh yeah, I need this, I buy this, I get this, it doesn't matter the price, just put it on there. And then at the end of the day, you realize your mistake, and you're like, okay, I'm going to have to pay for this for a few years. But back to interesting things, is there a light at the end of tunnel? Because when we look at next year, especially with the playoff format now, it's difficult to get a home playoff game. You need to finish top four of your conference. And when we know the advantage that a home game could be for Cincinnati with the crowd, the fans, and eventually the brand new stadium, it is a worthy target. Do you think that target is now postponed even longer? Do you think it's almost a second year franchise club that's going to start next year? Another almost a second expansion year because of all the rebuild and reconstruction necessary with Cincinnati?
Yeah, it's absolutely going to be a secondary expansion year that will have similar frustrations. There will be improvements. I have no doubt about that. It's hard to go down from the position that they're in at the moment. So there's some level of expectation of improvement. I think what they're really gunning for now is the season where they're going to be opening up their new soccer specific stadium, just outside of downtown Cincinnati and, the West End. And that's the target that they're gunning for now. They want to make sure that this team is successful when they step foot into that stadium. And it is going to be an uphill battle to get there. This isn't going to be an easy task, but I think they put that as their main goal, is to make sure that this team is at least competitive and fighting for a playoff spot and hopefully a home playoff spot come that 2021 season.
DJ, you mentioned the stadium. Can you maybe just give us a quick update on that, how that's going?
Yeah, absolutely. So the stadium has been progressing fairly nicely over the last few months. Construction has been ongoing. They aren't necessarily to structures yet. They're still prepping the ground for the most part, but a majority of the land has been purchased already. There are contracts to purchase what is needed or remaining. Most of the struggles that they've faced have come on political pressure sides. Due to this being so close to downtown Cincinnati and actually being built in one of the more depraved portions of the city, there are a lot of concerns about gentrification and how that will impact the surrounding community. And FC Cincinnati has had to struggle through some of those items that a lot of other clubs have gone through. But it is ongoing, and they just released recently updated renderings about what the final design will look like. A much improved design. The previous one seemed a lot like a floating spaceship in the middle of a historic district full of brick. And now it pays a little bit more homage to the surrounding architecture, has some ties to the city that it lacked before, to make it pretty unique. So it's a much improved design. And they are currently on pace to hit an opening during the 2021 season. How far into that season it remains to be seen, but that target seems to be realistic at this point.
All right. I guess I'll wrap up with this. It sounds very similar to Minnesota's build when we had what we called soft launch. Only the difference is that Cincinnati, during their soft launch, is really drawing the numbers out. There seems to be a genuine enjoyment of the stadium, flawed as it may be, for the fans currently there. So do you think that we can expect something similar? Do you think that Minnesota has, we see this year in the new stadium, and have turned it around, that Cincinnati fans realistically can look forward to that? And will this excitement, will the buzz wear off before we get to that point in Cincinnati? Do you have confidence that the fans will keep up with it?
Yeah, it's interesting. We saw FC Cincinnati kind of frame LAFC and Atlanta United as the type of expansion clubs that they wanted to be, given their early successes. When a lot of us were kind of watching this construction and going, ah, you look a lot more like a Minnesota or an Orlando in the way that you're putting these teams together, and it's going to be hard to find that type of success. And I think FC Cincinnati has clearly pivoted towards those Minnesota and Orlando mentalities of, look, we did not take the approach correctly, and we need to rethink how we're doing this. So if they can do what Minnesota had done this year, I think that would be beyond expectations. So I think they have a target that's worth shooting at in that respect. Whether they're able to do that, we're going to have to watch and see. But I think there is a model that's shown, hey, you can get this all wrong and then turn things around in time for a stadium opening. And it's a pretty short run-up and comparable run-up for what FC Cincinnati and Minnesota had to deal with. So I'm hopeful. These seem like the right moves. Be it stadium, be it technical staff that they brought in. And maybe in a year's time, a year and a half's time, we're going to be talking about a much better team than the one we currently have.
DJ Switzer, Wrong Side of the Pond, thank you very much for your time today. You can follow DJ on Twitter at Wrong Side of Pond, and you can listen to his Pond podcast and get your Cincinnati fix, Wrong Side of the Pond. Thank you very much, DJ, for your time today, and we hope that at least in the remaining 10 games, there's some good things to talk about.
Thanks, guys.
And we'll be right back after this very short break.
You are listening to Soccer Today. Follow us on Twitter at Soccer Today SPN and like our Facebook page, facebook.com/sportspodcastingnetwork. You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.
And we're back on Soccer Today. Kevin Laramie with Dwayne Rollins, as always. Dwayne, we will get to the weekend review in a second, and we'll talk about Alejandro Bedoya's comments as well in just a second. But just to close on Cincinnati, third coach in Major League Soccer, first year. It's quite a high number, and stability has been a key factor for success in Major League Soccer. Hopefully, stability now comes in Cincinnati.
It's the catch-22, right, in terms of you're having a poor team, so you do need to make changes, but at the same time, too many changes, and you're getting into that, you're starting all over again sort of situation. And you know, I bring up the analogy of early days TFC a lot when I'm dealing with this, because they're so blatantly obvious what they did wrong back then to anyone except apparently them at the time. But nonetheless, yeah. Cincinnati has to be careful about that. Three managers in 1 year, one being interim, albeit in your first year, is a lot of red flags that they don't quite get it yet. In fairness, they didn't quite get it in the preseason. It was, as I think I said at the time, the weirdest build I have ever seen of an expansion team. It made no sense. They did not seem to take any sort of direction or evidence from past MLS builds. They might have said they wanted to be in Atlanta or, or LAFC, that's great. Everyone does. I mean, LAFC might win the MLS Cup this year. They're certainly going to win the Shield, likely, and Atlanta won the MLS Cup last year. Of course you want to do that, but how do you do that, and what are you doing to emulate that is our different questions altogether, and they did nothing of the sort. They were trying to instead build the 1998 Chicago Fire, right? Like, they were trying to use draft picks and kind of mid-level, low-level American players like the Hagelin to build the team, and they're valuable, but
yeah, well, you know, when DJ was talking and he mentioned Nick Hagelin, I made the number 400 on the screen like I'm doing right now, because that's how much they paid for Nick Hagelin, $400,000 of allocation money. So yeah, those financial decisions will come and cost you when you're in your next off season wanting to get new players and realizing that, oh wait, we threw that money away.
Yeah, it's for a backup player. We said it at the time, but this is in hindsight. And I like Nick Hagelin. He's a genuinely nice guy, you know, that really did good things in his position. Scored one of TFC's biggest ever goals. Great player in his role. But for what they paid for him to be Omar Gonzalez, right? So it's a disconnect there that we don't necessarily it just demonstrated that they didn't really know what they were doing. And I hate to say it that blunt, but it was that blunt. And, you know, we were not alone in criticizing this. In fact, it was very hard to find anyone who even extra time was like pretty overtly critical of their build. And for the MLS sanctioned podcast to be that critical of something demonstrates you just how bizarre the build was. And we're seeing the playouts of this now. Well, but to move forward, Kevin, I don't know. I don't know what to say about this hiring, because I probably have PTSD from the Aaron Vinter days. So every time I see Dutch and MLS attached together, I just assume everything's going to go right sideways.
Yeah, well, it's hard to say. And I guess we're going to have to give him time and look at what he's doing. And, well, someone needs to be in the driver's seat. Might as well be him, right? At a certain point, you're like, yeah, why not? The guy's got a resume. He's coached first teams in big leagues in Europe, like Eredivisie. You were talking about Belgium as well. So there is, of course, experience there, and experience at a high level compared to the other manager that you had. So it's almost a departure from the mentality of, okay, well, we're up-and-coming coach that was with us in D2. Is now coming with us, and the assistant that was there for a few years taking over as well, because he knows and he can just continue the direction. This is a change of direction, and we'll have to see.
Yeah, look, the one thing I will say to sort of speak to the Venture comment that I just made, I mean, the difference here is that Aaron Venture came over without any experience coaching as well, other than an assistant at a youth level, right? So, yeah. And a world-class player. I mean, Aaron Venture was a world-class player in his day, but it's a different there. At least you have a guy that has coached, as he said, as DJ said, at not just in bigger leagues. And I do think the Dutch league is bigger, MLS fans, certainly in terms of pressures and things like that. He's coached at that level, but for teams that are near the bottom of that, which is a different skill altogether. And there's almost just, you know, in world football, we're seeing this with, you know, specialists that manage those lower teams.
Are you saying that they should have got Sam Allardyce? That's pretty much maybe the Dutch equivalent.
Yeah, exactly. And look, that's not the worst thing. I mean, there's no relegation in MLS, as we well know, but avoiding not making the playoffs, like being that like low-level playoff bubble team, is kind of the equivalent. If you can get Cincinnati up to that, I think their fans would be thrilled, right? So that's something, because they are legitimately, like, they're in a hole right now, and it's hard to see a way out, as DJ said. It's a couple years before they're going to get the allocation back. It's a couple years before they can really truly build. And, you know, without the new stadium, it's unlikely that they can generate the revenues to justify a big name, you know, guy with a cape to swoop in with a name, right? So, and they don't need that player, because they're getting that sort of good vibe in the stands, and the fans seem to be having fun, and they're accepting that this is going to be a struggle, and they will continue to do that for a couple years. But eventually, you know, as we saw in Toronto, and the analogies are in my face, it's hard to avoid them. eventually that party ends. The keg party runs out and, you know, the closing time comes on the speakers and you need to figure out a reason to get you back to the next night, right? When that happened in Toronto, it happened fast.
Yeah.
And it took Jermaine Defoe. It took a bloody big deal to solve it again. Like, they had to basically close the club down, repaint it, and reopen it under a new name,
yeah,
basically, to continue the analogy of a party. So, you know, enjoy the party, Cincinnati fans. Enjoy the build, and hopefully that they stick with this guy regardless, and let him make a few mistakes. And I think that's one of the keys when you're talking about MLS stability. You bring a guy in that doesn't have MLS experience, he's going to make some errors in terms of judgment, and that might almost seem like a bit of a backtrack for a while. And I think it's hard then to maintain the course and to say, you know what, we're going to let this guy grow because we believe in his abilities as a coach. And we're going to let him make a couple mistakes, and maybe next year isn't what we wanted, but we give him a couple years to build something. And I think, you know, we're looking at MDS in Vancouver in the same way, right? Like, the key to the Whitecaps right now, just like it is in Cincinnati, is to maintain that forward march with your leadership core that are making the decisions to build that roster in place, and let them do what they do, and don't make a knee-jerk reaction on it for 3 or 4 years. Until it's clear that it's going the wrong way. And I mean, that's hard to hear as a sports fan, but the reality is that often they do go the wrong way because only one team wins a year. But you got to be back to competence, and it takes stability to do that. And hopefully they get that now, because clearly there are a lot of passionate fans in that market that deserve something better than what they've gotten this year.
And patient fans. So that's always good too. Now, moving on, before we get to the weekend review, we'll quickly address Alejandro Bedoya's comments yesterday after scoring the opening goal in a 5-win victory of the Philadelphia Union over the 10-man DC United. 3 minutes in, Alejandro Bedoya scores the opening goal, celebrates with his teammates, runs to a sideline microphone, and yells, "End gun violence, Congress, let's go. Do it now." I'm paraphrasing, obviously, but those comments are making and those comments come after a difficult weekend in the United States, in Dayton, Ohio, and as well in Texas. Two mass shootings happened in less than 24 hours, which prompted Alejandro Bedoya to first of all come out on Twitter and tell everyone that he's tired of those things and Congress should do something, and then taking a microphone literally and dropping the mic on a sideline after scoring his goal with the same comments. It is getting some traction, and I'm wondering your thoughts on the comments.
Yeah, look, I make my political leanings pretty clear. In the United States, they'd call me a communist probably because I'm left of center in Canada. So there you go. But nonetheless, so obviously I'm on the side of what he said. Now, the only caveat I'm going to give, and they came out today that they're not going to fine him. That surprises me because MLS generally acts very corporate in these ways. And we're seeing it we don't talk about fan issues a lot, like sort of supporter group stuff anymore, because I think there's better places for you to get that kind of information. But there have been some incidents, particularly in Cascadia, where anti-fascist kind of symbolism has been removed for political means in the sections out there, which is apparently MLS policy now. They're considering that a political statement to speak out against fascism, which boggles the mind. But at any rate, nonetheless, that's where America is right now. And, you don't need a soccer blogger or podcaster to tell you that. We can see it with our own eyes. So I'm surprised that in the current environment in the United States right now, and to a lesser extent, but still here in Canada, that we didn't see MLS as a corporate entity try and slap his wrist a little bit for that, because they have, money is involved, basically. They don't want to piss off someone who might be on the Trump side of things here. And I don't know how not calling out against people getting gunned down in a mall is political, but it is.
That's the thing. I think the way he said it is the reason why he is not getting fined. The way he went about saying it, even on his Twitter comments the day before, he was really nonpartisan in his comments. And it's almost saying end violence. So this is like saying end hate. This is like saying don't cross the line. This is like MLS's own message of, you know what, everyone, like the same LGBTQ message that they've been spreading this year with great success in Major League Soccer, and the Stop the Hate, and the couple of campaigns they have going in their public, I would say the PSA campaigns that they do have in Major League Soccer, it's very similar in the way that it was done. So nonpartisanship, it wasn't made and it wasn't targeted at one side or the other of any debate. It was literally a all lives matter type of comment, and there was no way Major League, with the traction those comments got, there was no way Major League Soccer would have looked responsible by fining a loud voice like Bedoya in last night's game. They would have looked like the bad guy, and it would have become a PR fiasco. I think the fiasco has been avoided by the lack of fine for Alejandro Bedoya, and that's a good thing.
Yeah, well, yeah, to be clear, in the right context, we understand that All Lives Matter can actually be political, but so we understand that. But in this context, it's not meant to be. So nonetheless, yeah, it's just I'm stuttering here. I don't usually stutter when I offer my opinion here because I'm very reluctant to say anything that is at all political at all anymore because of the way that the world works, and there's just no one listens anymore. And at least in this particular case, there seems to be, at least within the soccer bubble, a reasonable conversation taking place. I do agree on one hand that it is a slippery slope when you allow political commentary to happen, because I know most of us in soccer bubble is mostly left of center. If we're being honest, I mean, it would be a decidedly blue kind of environment, the soccer bubble, to use the American terminology. So if he had gone to that mic and yelled something that was anti-immigrant in an equally sort of benign way, you would have people screaming for him to be slapped down. And that's the only thing I'll say about that is at all not supportive, because I do support the message he said. Just be careful of the slippery slope when it comes to the politics in these games. But I hesitate to even say that because I don't want to mute people. It's not my job. It shouldn't be anyone's job. And the idea of quote-unquote hashtag stick to sports is ridiculous. Sports exists within the general society, within the general world, and it's impossible to completely live within that bubble, much as we sometimes try to. So I'm glad they're not finding him. I hope that there is an element of not real lifeness that remains in sports to allow it to be our escape. But at the same time, I recognize that it is impossible to isolate sports or anything, entertainment, music, anything from the real world that it exists in.
I think we've escaped for things for long enough, and I think it's time we face things head on. And sometimes bringing the real world into sports makes us realize that the escape is all well and good, but sometimes you can't just run from real life, and things have to be addressed. And we'll see if anything comes out of it. I doubt that Congress or anyone will act on an MLS player's demands, even though those demands are, well, they're worthy. Now, there's no segment and segues to go from this. Let's just look at the results from the games last weekend. Couple of blowouts, big blowout in Colorado. Hopefully, no one caught the plague at the same time, but I guess Montreal did catch the plague a bit.
Yeah, was that an Habs-Avs preseason game I wasn't aware of? What was happening down there?
So Friday? Was it Thursday? No, it's Friday. The Colorado Rapids sent a press release saying, okay, it was supposed to be fireworks tonight, and it was supposed to be like barbecues and events. That's all canceled because of prairie dogs that are infested with fleas that have plague virus surrounding the stadium. But the game will happen. Come and have fun at Dick's Sporting Goods and maybe risk your life.
Yeah, I mean, I think we were probably fine. It was a strange, funny thing there. I was more referring to Montreal's react or score down there. But nonetheless, yeah, there was a good laugh that we had this past weekend when I've never seen an MLS game canceled by the plague. And we have to put the word "the" in there, even though it is not referring to, you know, the death of half the world's population in the 1300s. But nonetheless, the prairie dog plague, it was very real. And MLS is delightful sometimes, Kevin, but to the game.
The game wasn't delightful. Jesus. 6-3. Colorado scoring 6 goals. Kai Kamara, the Montreal Impact killer. Montreal skipped twice the opportunity to sign the striker. And I guess every time he plays against Montreal, he scores a hat-trick. He's got two hat-tricks. Both hat-tricks are versus Montreal. And I guess he really loves playing against the Impact, at home or away.
Might get Martin Bailey, if you're listening out there, why don't you run some numbers and tell us how many goals that Kai Kamara has scored against Toronto and Montreal, because he could be the two solitudes killer, because he does seem to beat up on TFC as well. Of course, he played for the Whitecaps for a while, so I don't know what his record there would be. But, yeah, look, it's so hard for me to understand. The Impact and TFC have a lot of parallels right now in terms of trying to figure them out. Because just when you think everything's going well, they have a result that makes you go, oh, God, what's happening here? And they kind of are just sputtering, and they're a point apart. So
here,
there
Dwayne,
you go.
Put yourself back to last Saturday when Montreal put four against Philadelphia, maybe one of the best teams in the East, maybe. And they beat them at home 4-0 in a game that they dominated, played well, and it looked like the Impact was back on the winning side. And then they lay, not an egg, they lay a dozen. Or, more appropriately, they lay half a dozen eggs against Colorado on Saturday night. It's a tough reaction. I know that it's a busy week. I know that they're traveling. They travel Sunday straight from Colorado to go to Calgary to play Cavalry on... that's next Sunday, sorry. They're playing this week. They're playing in Montreal. And next weekend, after their game away, they're going to travel directly to Calgary. But three games in 10 days, if not four games in 10 days for the Impact. And there was some squad rotation, but 6-3 versus one of the worst teams in the Western Conference... They laid a half dozen, and yeah, it's. I agree with you, Dwayne. It's a team hard to figure out this year. They can be good, but the midfield, it cannot be a one man midfield. They need some help.
Well, there's two games. They've allowed 6 goals in one game and 7 goals in another game this year, right?
Kansas City.
That is hard to wrap your head around.
The two games that should not be mentioned after this show.
Yeah, and. You know, that is a real issue for the Impact. When you look at the goal differential versus the other teams that are bundled up in that very tight East, they're essentially just imagine them a point lower because they're not winning many tiebreakers, right? Because their goal diff is terrible. So that is something to worry about. And it's also just plain hard to worry about that because, like, it sort of suggests to me anyway, from a bit outside, that there might be just something that once things start to go against them, they don't seem to have a fight to stop it from going really against them because it's happened twice. So, you know, it's kind of a trend. So we'll see what that means moving forward.
And it happened twice. I keep hitting my lamp. Sorry for that noise if you're hearing this. Way more movement in my new studio, but means that I can hit things when I'm moving. So I should stop letting the Italian side of me gesticulate when I talk and just talk. But for me, Dwayne, it's more than that. There's games they conceded 4. There are games they conceded 3. Of course, there's a lot of games they conceded none. But consistency is important. And I don't know if it's a character trait, because Montreal did come out at some points and play well, but lately they had that 4-game losing streak, and then they had that big win in at home against Philly, and then this result. I guess I have to wait until Wednesday to judge, because when there's squad rotation and multiple games in the same time, you have to sometimes take the entirety of those games and as a whole and see the point tally at the end and see if the result in the cup was worth it. But so far, round 1 of 4 in the next 10 days has been quite disappointing. And from this point, Dwayne, hopefully they get the player, Bojan Krcic, that has been rumored over the last couple of days, because they do need some help for Nacho Piatti in the midfield, and Samuel Piet cannot come fast enough back from injury.
Well, and they need to start transitioning away from Piatti as well, because we do all assume that his time will end eventually. And we know his time will end eventually. But, you know, you kind of have to start thinking that way. It's look, as I said off the top of this, there's a lot of analogies between Toronto and Montreal right now, because both are hard to peg, because they can look like world beaters one day and they can look like world destroyers on the other. So I guess on that note, we'll segue to TFC. And TFC wasn't even like going, you know, both directions, you know, one game to one game. They were going one half to one half on the weekend. They looked like great in the first half. They were unlucky to not be up 2-0. Josie was offside by a hair, and, you know, they should have basically, Robles had the save of the year. If you haven't seen it, go look that one up. It was an absolutely
like unbelievable save that he made. He leapt across and got a hand to the ball as it was the strength on the hand to not let it go through him. It is a crazy save. At any rate, so that's how they're not up at the half, and then they lay an egg in the second half. The Vanny out haters are out in full force because they believe that he was responsible for not adjusting in the second half. And I mean, sure, you can make that argument. There certainly was a difference in tempo and possession and all the good things that go with a good performance in the second half. And then Mbenga, you know, gets a bit unlucky with the own goal, and Toronto had no fight to get back from there. You know, I maintain that if you look at the overall trends of TFC in 2019, when they are fully healthy, there's still a lot more to be positive about than negative about. But, you know, the fact is they had that 9-game run, which put them in a hole, and that hole makes them below the red line still. Very close to the rest of the red line, but that loss was a big one because it could have jumped them up into home field advantage spots, and instead there now is a bit of a gap, and you're looking at, you know, kind of four teams scrambling for the bottom three spots and then the teams above. And, you know, with this weekend, things move quickly in MLS, and those points make a big difference. And the fact that, you know, if this was high, had they just gotten two results in that 9-game run, they would be right in the middle of that mess. And you can look at a result in New York and go, well, they lost a road game to the Red Bulls. That's not a big deal. But because they went 9 without winning, suddenly that loss, because of the points mm-hmm. involved, is huge. It's a 6-point swing with the Red Bulls.
Yeah.
And it's just a big thing. And it all comes down to their play when they weren't healthy. And it speaks to their depth issues, which have never been the same since the championship season.
Since Victor Vasquez left. Well, let's be fair. Oh, but Dwayne as well, the last couple of games actually nullified what Toronto has done the two games prior with big wins against Montreal and the coup that they had made in the standings, jumping that red line, and now they're back under. And it's going to be difficult for Toronto in the upcoming weeks. Let's quickly go through the rest of the schedule and the results before we say goodbye for today. LAFC, big win on the road versus New England. Nothing surprising, but New England didn't look that bad. Orlando 2, FC Dallas 0. Win on the road for the Vancouver Whitecaps, 2-1 versus FC Cincinnati. We wanted to talk with DJ a little bit about Vancouver, but it was too many Cincinnati topics and directions to go with. But Vancouver 2, Cincinnati 1, a win that comes at a good time for the Whitecaps to at least give some hopes to the fans.
I always listen to the post-game show of the Whitecaps. Even if I can't watch them live, I make sure I listen to the post-game show because they're the ebbs and flows and the emotional ringer that their media that cover them week in, week out reminds me of the bad old days here. And it was the joy in their voices was so self-evident when they got that win. And it wasn't even necessarily like they're Whitecaps fans, because often we're ingrained to not cheer for the team that we cover. But when you cover a team week in, week out, and they lose constantly, it just drains on you. So when they finally see a win, you're just happy to deal with happy people. And it was
exactly.
Kind of fun to listen to
it
them.
Is, it's nothing personal. You're just happy not to be yelled at after you just asked a question.
Exactly, and Mark Sampson is pretty good to them, but nonetheless, it was they had to get that win, and it showed that that Cincinnati is really in trouble. Look,
it doesn't say anything actually about the Whitecaps; it just says a lot about Cincinnati.
Although, look, I have watched it since, and you know, Cincinnati had chances in that game. They're just such an incomplete roster. And not to go back to belabor, as we talked a lot about them today, like they were just built awful, right to the point that they spent a DP on Adi, who is a TAM player at best at this point of his career, and he's probably even a secondary TAM player, right? Like, I mean, it's just mind boggles the decisions they made to build that roster. But at any rate, you know, Vancouver does get the win there. And quickly on LAFC, New England had the 11 games, and a lot of people were talking about them in glowing terms, and there was a lot of tie-ins to Bruce Arena coming there, and he certainly did stabilize things and simplify things, I think, is really what Bruce Arena does the best. But when you look at the teams that they beat in that run, a lot of them were below the red line. So this first real test at home against the best team in the league, albeit, although they did look okay, as you say, it does sort of speak to maybe viewing New England under Bruce Arena. You have to find that middle ground. They are not 11 games without a loss, but they aren't as bad as they were heading into that either, right? There's something in the middle, And I think that yesterday showed that.
Chicago wins 1-0 on the road to Houston. San Jose won. Columbus won. Another good result for San Jose. And again, unbeaten in a while for the Quakes. Real Salt Lake 3, NYCFC 1. Big win at the Riot for Real Salt Lake. And yesterday, Minnesota, Portland, 1-0 win at home for Minnesota. The game we talked about a bit earlier, DC United 1, Philly 5 at the Audi Field in Washington. Big game by Philly. Big way to come back from a big loss last week. Of course, they had the advantage of playing versus 10 men in this game. But for Philly, a big win. And the win, too, with the Bedoya's comment, is going to have some resonance. It's going to stay in the consciousness for a while. And I think that's important. Philly answering after losing a big game on the road. And to finish the evening, Sporting Kansas City 3, Seattle Sounders 2 at CenturyLink Field in Seattle. Big win for Kansas City. They desperately need point at this point of the season. So those were the games this weekend.
Yeah, look, DC is an interesting. They're starting to look a lot like the Fire last year to me in terms of how everyone was really high on them heading into the year. And if you look back to the start of 2018, a lot of people were thinking that the Fire might finally be able to turn it. And I think that in hindsight, we now view that as people overestimating, you know, one or two players and really wishing that an historic team in MLS was ready to turn things around. DC United has not been great over the last little while. And they're more in danger, I think, of falling down towards that mush that I talked of earlier than getting up towards the top based on the results of the last game. Certainly San Jose, and I'll summarize, this will be my last thoughts of the day. San Jose, you're starting to hear a lot of people not just talk about them in, like, isn't this a great story, but also now start talking about them as maybe they're the dark horse to win everything this year because they play so unconventionally. And MLS is a weird league, and in a one-off game, if they can get rolling to the playoffs, just like Chivas Upper did, there's no Chivas USA anymore, so I don't know why I had to distinguish that, but you know, we did. Just like Chivas Guadalajara did in the Champions League a few years ago, they were by far, far from the most talented team in Liga MX, but they won the Continental Championship because in that playoff format, they were just so strong. And now it seems like the Earthquakes might be able to get themselves into a playoff position.
Oh, more than just a playoff position, Dwayne. Right now, they're third in the Western Conference with 38 points. Okay, they're like 14 points behind LA, but they're third in the Western Conference. They would play a game at home versus Real Salt Lake if the playoff would start right now.
Yeah, and you'd be the favorite in that match. It's, you know, on road, one off, unconventional style. I mean, who's to say? And that's the other side of this one game, one and off thing, is if you get a team that's just really tricky, it's not necessarily that most talented, and they find their way in, then who knows, right? Like, if this is MLS, your champion is not necessarily your best team. And there would be worse future bets than to put a little tenner on San Jose right now, although it would have been a great bet to put a tenner on San Jose at the start of the year. You'd be like, they're looking at $10,000.
I was going to say millionaire.
Well, you put 100 on it maybe, but yeah, 1,000. Yeah.
That would have been the case. And yeah, but interesting stuff in Major League Soccer. It's never dull. There's always something to talk about, and there's always interesting, very interesting aspect to Major League Soccer in the dark days of summer, dog days of summer. And it's August. It's August 5th, and we're moving into the last third already of the Major League Soccer season. If you're like Montreal and other, there's only like 10 games left or less. So it's going to be a long sprint or a quick marathon. Your choice. They're very similar. But on that note, don't forget to follow Dwayne on social media at 24th Minute to have his full thoughts when he watches soccer games or on anything. A great follow. I suggest you do so. You can follow myself at Kev Larame and this show at Soccer Today SPN. We'll be back tomorrow around 11 a.m. for another edition of The World of Football with a Soccer Perspective. That is Soccer Today. And tomorrow we will record the latest edition of the Two Solitude Soccer Podcast, where Dwayne and I will talk about Canadian soccer in all its glory. You can find this exclusive show for $2 a month at patreon.com/sportspodcastnetwork. But as always, until tomorrow, Have a great soccer.
You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.